Details of a possible legal and financial settlement are leaking out. It's clear that a bitter legal battle over alimony lies ahead.
The cost of garlic is surging upwards in the world's largest producer, China. The retail price in some areas has risen 40-fold this year, while the wholesale price in general has increased by 15 times in the past 8 months. Analysts say the rise is due in part to a surge in demand. Many Chinese believe garlic can help protect against swine flu. The Turkish authorities say they're discussing what to do with an Iranian atheist who says she fled persecution in Iran. Nigar Aziz Moradi, the leader of the Raelian movement in Iran, was arrested in Turkey last week after arriving without proper travel documents. Raelians believe humans were created by extraterrestrials. Nigar Aziz Moradi's supporters say she faces the death sentence for apostasy if she's returned to Iran. BBC News.
You're listening to World Briefing from the BBC with Audrey Brown. Now, America and now China have increased hopes for a meaningful agreement on carbon emissions at next month's climate change summit in Copenhagen. The two countries have both set out new commitments to reduce the emissions they produce. The US plans to cut emissions by 17% by 2020. And China has announced today it'll reduce its carbon intensity by at least 40% by the same date. This means pollution from China may still grow, but not by much in relation to the size of its economy. And like Mr. Obama, the Chinese Prime Minister Wen Jiabao will attend the summit in Denmark. A Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson, Jin Gang, said this was an indication of how serious they were about tackling global warming.
Wen Jiabao's attendance at the meeting shows the importance that the Chinese government places on this issue and shows that the Chinese government is willing to cooperate with the international community.
So what exactly does a reduction in carbon intensity mean in practice? Our correspondent in Beijing is Quinton Somerville.
Well, carbon intensity means that China's factories, its power plants are going to become more efficient. They're going to use the energy that they consume in a better way. That means that there will be fewer pollutants released into the atmosphere. But what it doesn't mean is that China, which is the world's largest emitter of CO2, will stop emitting CO2, or that its overall level of emissions will start to fall. They will continue to climb for many years to come. This is an economy that's still growing. It's a country that's still developing. It wants to lift many millions of people out of poverty. It will do that using energy, and most of that energy will still be coal.
Now, even though China will continue to be a big polluter, its announcement has generally been well received. Ailun Yang is climate campaign manager with Greenpeace China.
It's a positive step 2 weeks before Copenhagen, but I think that what this target means is that China will continue its effort to tackle its CO2 emissions. However, Greenpeace does believe that China can and should do more.
Ailun Yang from Greenpeace. Our environment correspondent Matt McGrath tells us what impact China's targets have on the UN climate talks process.
China's announcement of a target for slowing the growth of their emissions will add to the momentum created by the United States declaring that they will reduce their CO2 by 17% by 2020. But these steps forward won't by themselves guarantee a deal in the Danish capital. China says its new targets are voluntary. They have consistently rejected the idea of taking on legally binding reductions. They say that legally enforceable cuts are for developed countries only. This position isn't accepted by the United States. The Americans are unlikely to sign up to a deal where commitments by China or anyone else are not measurable, reportable, and verifiable. Scientists and environmentalists, while welcoming the fact that the world's two largest emitters are at least bringing something to the table, will be concerned by the level of ambition of the targets announced. They will be hoping that the negotiating process itself will produce deeper cuts, as they say that reductions of 25 to 40% are needed by 2020 to keep global warming to 2 degrees Celsius. Another important aspect of the Chinese announcement is its impact on India, as the two countries have been to the fore in rejecting the idea of any limitations on the rights of poorer nations to enrich themselves using fossil fuels. India will now be under pressure to accept some limitations on its use of carbon at the Copenhagen talks. This pressure is also likely to come from the very poorest and most threatened nations, who will want to see a deal done that releases large amounts of money to help them in the short term. While the Chinese statement on targets will be a boost, the discussions about finance and about access to technology will also be crucial to delivering some sort of political agreement in Copenhagen.
Our environment reporter Matt McGrath. The head of the German armed forces has resigned.
No, I I'd say about 45 at this point. And our freezer's cold.
Yeah, right. Of course the freezer's cold. I'm just trying to think. Can you briefly tell me what the recipe was? Is it cream and chocolate?
It was just, semi-sweet chocolate was called for, and I used chocolate chips, and just heavy cream.
What were the proportions? Softened. What was the proportion of cream to chocolate?
In the beginning, right now, just 8 ounces of the chocolate and 1 cup of the heavy cream and 2 tablespoons of the butter.
Okay.
And mixing in the cream after it, you know, was simmered on the stove.
Right, I would use a little less cream, but all right, you're already there. This is what you're going to do. You're going to have frozen truffles.
Okay.
You're going to let them freeze all the way through, then dip them in the chocolate, okay? And you're going to put them back in the freezer.
Okay.
The other alternative is you can serve them frozen without dipping them in the chocolate, but you can roll them in cocoa.
And I do have that as well.
That would be a fabulous way to do it. Roll some in cocoa and roll some in confectioner's sugar so they'll be dark and light on the plate.
Okay. How much more time will they probably need to freeze?
What time are your guests coming?
Well, we're not coming. We just go from Maryland to Maryland. We don't have to travel during Thanksgiving.
The longer they're in the freezer, the better, because you want to serve them frozen and serve them, you know, like little ducats that are going to melt in people's mouths.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. Thank you so much.
You are welcome.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And you too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care. You can reach us at 800-537-5252 or go to the website, splendidtable.org. Now, we're going to be back for more of your calls in a moment. Yeah, as I said, number's 800-537-5252. And by the way, send us photos. Show us what's happening in your kitchen right now or at your table. Reach us at splendidtable.org. But right now, we're joined by Christopher Kimball. Now, he's the creator of Cook's Illustrated magazine, Cook's Country, and PBS's America's Test Kitchen. Hey, Chris, happy Turkey Day.
You know, every year, this is the time I get to spend most time with you.
You know, you're right.
And you're the perfect person to spend Thanksgiving with.
That's perhaps the nicest thing you've ever
said
to me.
The thing that's really upsetting, though, is you actually know about twice as much as I do about cooking. So it's always a humbling, it's a very humbling thing, you know.
Boy, does Thanksgiving soften you up, Chris. I love
this. Yeah, well, one out of 365.
I'm very thankful for this. You know, I'm wondering something because I realize you run a magazine, and this time of year, magazines are knocking themselves out to find yet another revolutionary, never-been-done-before way to roast the turkey that will give you the ultimate bird. So I'm just curious, what is the revolutionary, never-been-done-before method that Cook's Illustrated?
Editorial tables around the world, especially in America, in March, that's when people start working on their fall. There's this panic sets in, and everyone says, we've done turkey 25 different ways. What are we going to do this year? And so we came up this year with barding, B-A-R-D-I-N-G. So we do salt the bird, which, by the way, everyone's calling dry brining now, which is kind of
Explain to me what you mean by dry brining.
Well, everyone knows what brining is, which is a cup of table salt per gallon of water, and the bird sits in there 8 hours.
Now, by the way, we've got actually an email from New York, Adam in New York City, wanting to know about dry brining. So you're saying you're rubbing salt actually into the meat of the turkey?
Yeah, you're going to rub a teaspoon and a half of kosher salt under the skin, each breast, and then under the leg.
Right.
And then a tablespoon in the cavity, and you let it sit for at least 24 hours or 48 hours. And it works in a similar method to brining, which means that some of the juices actually come out to the surface attracted by the salt. The salt's dissolved in the liquid and it goes back in. That's why you have to let it sit quite a while. And then you get a very similar effect. That is, when roasting, that salt prevents the proteins in the meat from exuding as much juice, so it's a little juicier. Some people think, and we've tested it, that you get it's not as wet. You know, sometimes brining, you get a sort of a wetter texture to the meat.
Yeah.
Which I like. But if you want a drier, more authentic texture, you can dry brine.
Okay.
But barding, which I think is, I actually got this out of, you know, American Cookery, Jim Beard's book. You just take salt pork and you can dry salt if you want, dry brine if you want. But even if you don't want to, you can just put strips of salt pork, about a pound of it, quarter-inch strips all over the breast side up,
right.
the breast,
right.
punch some holes in it first, and then over the legs, the thighs, cover that with some wet, 2 yards of wet cheesecloth.
The punching the holes is the key because then the fat melts into the holes, if you'll pardon
the expression. And then a little heavy-duty foil on top and roasted it, you know, like 325 for a few hours to get up at 140 internal, and then take everything off. All pork and the cheesecloth and the foil, and then roast it at 425 or 450 till it's done. So that way you get salt, you get flavor, and you protect the breast meat because you have wet cheesecloth,
and
you have the salt pork, and you have the foil. So you can avoid actually brining, even dry brining if you want, by doing it that way.
Sounds pretty swell. Also, I love what happens to salt pork or bacon in that process.
Well, I mean, any recipe that starts with salt pork. Even some desserts are
yes, exactly,
are
exactly. Salt pork and chocolate, not a bad thing.
No, some people are selling chocolate bars, bacon chocolate bars, which I actually don't like, but
I kind of do. But that's me. That's me. Right. Hey, you want to take some calls?
Sure.
Okay, call us 800-537-5252 or email us online splendidtable.org. Questions for Chris Kimball? He's got Cook's Illustrated magazine. He knows everything. Well, Chris, we've got Kathy calling from Howell, Minnesota. Kathy, what's your question?
Hi, Lynn. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
Before I start, Lynn, I have a personal question for you.
Sure.
What are you having today? I sort of picture you cutting into the Thanksgiving lasagna.
No, believe it or not. Although my family used to always begin with a broth and cappelletti. But no, the whole gang is coming over after the show. And I'm doing our Chris Basil turkey. It's the blast method of roasting a turkey, 450, 10 minutes to the pound. And everybody's bringing a dish. So I'm making some stuffing. I'm doing a savory bread pudding, and I've done some sweet potatoes. And everybody brings a dish. So you see, it's the Tom Sawyer method of having Thanksgiving. You tell everyone what fun it is to cook on this holiday, and then they come to your house with their food. It's a very simple.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's a very simple approach. My job was having the house clean, and I figured even that I could, you know, kind of a lot of candlelight too.
Well, Lynn didn't say she lives in a church. It's a church social, right?
Yes, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
After the service, then everyone brings them.
Yes, yes. Except we worship in front of the fireplace, and it's a bottle of wine. But we're not going to go there. So, Kathy, did you have a question?
I do have a question. My question is, I've never rested a turkey before, and I don't know how to do it, and I don't really know why you do it.
Chris, this sounds like it's right down your alley.
Well, any roast, beef, pork, turkey, chicken, if you cut into it, and we've done this actually on the show, TV show, if you cut into it right away, a lot of those juices are just going to flow right out onto the cutting board.
Mm-hmm.
So by letting it sit, and it depends how big a piece of meat you have, but with a turkey, you could certainly let it sit 20 minutes, 25 minutes. Loosely cover, very loosely, with a foil because you don't want to steam the skin. And that way the proteins will hold on to those juices when you cut into it and you won't lose the juice to the cutting board. So roughly speaking, any roast over 3 or 4 pounds, I would let it sit at least 15, 20 minutes, loosely covered. And then, as I said, when you carve it, you won't see all the juices on the board, not in the meat.
And the heavier the roast, the longer it rests or anything like that?
Well, yeah, you don't want it to cool off. So 20 minutes is fine. It's just a general rule. You know, small roast, 10 minutes, a bigger roast like a turkey, 20 minutes is fine. I mean, if you let it sit 45 minutes, it's just going to cool off too much.
Well, okay.
But 20 minutes is a good rule.
And okay. Kathy, the difference is remarkable. It really
I'll be
is.
Sure we do it this year.
Yeah, do it. And the thing I love about it is it gives you the leeway then to stick things in the oven to reheat them. But it's true. I mean, that to me is the reason why somebody came up with this idea, aside from the fact that the meat's going to be juicier and taste better and it finishes cooking. But that means you can flip the oven up and off you go.
Yeah, hot rolls.
Yeah, hot rolls and reheat the sweet potatoes and the mashed potatoes and all of that business.
Well, thank you guys and happy Thanksgiving.
And
you
happy
too,
Thanksgiving
thanks.
To you too. Chris, we've got a caller calling in from Edina, Minnesota, Amy. Amy, hi. What do you want to talk about?
Hi. I'm calling because I am trying a new method for my turkey this year, and I started it at 500 degrees for a half an hour.
Right.
And then I put the temperature down to 350, but when I put the temperature down, I also put a foil over top of the breast, and I pulled out my thermometer at that point, and then I stuck it back in, and the temperature kind of went wild. And I'm wondering if I should still trust my thermometer to tell me when it's done or if I should just fly by the seat of my pants.
Whoa. Chris, what do you think?
Well, first, the method. Did you brine, or is this a kosher bird or a frozen butterball, or did you brine it?
It was a fresh turkey, and I brined it first.
Okay. Well, that's good. I would say 500, then down to 300 or 350. You might, I mean, if it were me, I might want to. You started breast side up and left it breast side up?
Yep.
You might consider, as they say, flipping the bird at this point and getting the breast side down. Because if it's breast side up and starting even brined in a 500-degree oven, you might end up, even with foil on top, with overcooked breast meat. So I would consider after now, once you flipped it, flip it over down, breast okay. side down to finish that way. Maybe put it back breast side up at the very end, but I would consider that. As far as the thermometer, what kind of thermometer do you have? Is it a meat thermometer or an instant read?
It's an instant read thermometer. It's a probe thermometer, so I've got the thermometer
like a
polder
or something. Yeah, the problem with those we found over the years is the probe, that metal wire, sometimes breaks partially. They're very susceptible to breaking. So do you have another instant read thermometer, just a regular one?
Yep, I do.
Yeah, I would use that. And the other thing you'll find, by the way, is when you take the temperature of a turkey, every time you take the temperature, it'll be different because every spot's a little different. So insert it horizontally into each breast.
Okay.
And then also make sure you're not, when you do the thighs, it's not sort of in the air pocket between the carcass and the leg, and it's also not hitting bones. You got to take the temperature in four or five places and sort of take an average because it'll never come out consistent ever.
Okay.
And the temperature you're looking for, Chris, I think you may agree with this, is somewhere between 165 and 170, generally. And then if you give it that rest we just talked about, the temperature goes up more degrees, so that finishes it off. But that way you're really safe.
Well, and the dark meat can actually be cooked to almost any temperature. I mean, you can get that up to 175, 180. It's just the breast meat you don't want below, as Lynn said, 165 or 160. Yeah.
Yeah, just to be on the safe side. So you should have perfect success. Don't worry.
Great. Thank you so much.
All will be well. Have a great dinner and have a great holiday.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
And you too.
You too.
Call us, guys, 800-537-5252. Elizabeth is on the road in Michigan. So, Elizabeth, are you pulling over before you talk to us?
No. But yes, I mean, I've been pulling over intermittently as I've been driving because I'm so freaked out about this pie.
Tell us what the problem is.
Okay, well, here I have to really quick confess to you. I am actually a professional baker. I should be able to do this, but there's no baking involved.
Okay. Hey, it's okay. I've been doing this for more years than I'll ever admit, and you have no idea of the screw-ups that happen in my kitchen.
Well, oh, my gosh. Well, so what happened is I saw this really great recipe that, you know, it seemed really great, but being the baker that I am, I decided I could make it better. And what I've done is I have a 9-inch, you know, graham cracker crust, and
right.
I made a cream cheese and whipped cream kind of base. So for the first layer of the pie, and it's got all sorts of delicious like ginger and cloves and that kind of
right,
thing in the
right.
mixture. And that set up just fine overnight. And so this morning I got up and I made the second layer, which is pumpkin with, I put instant pudding in it to kind of help it firm up.
Right.
And a couple of different spices. And it's not setting up, Lynn, and I don't know what to do.
Okay. All right. Chris, what I'm thinking of
is gelatin.
Yes, exactly. Two minds with but a single thought. This is time for Knox.
2 teaspoons.
Really? 2 teaspoons and about, what, 2 tablespoons of cold water, right?
And let it sit for 5 or 10 minutes to soften, yep.
And then scrape off that top layer. Okay.
Oh, I haven't even put it on yet.
You haven't? Oh, that's good. That's good.
And then just heat it after it softens. Heat it just till it melts, and then mix it in with the top layer.
Yeah, and whisk it in really well. Whisk it in really well.
Okay, so heat the gelatin
until it's liquid.
Once it's melted.
Right,
okay?
Right.
Let it sit for about 10 minutes on top of the water until it softens, then heat it very briefly, then whisk it in.
Yeah, and do it in a double boiler. You know, put a bowl. Put the gelatin in the metal bowl over simmering water. Where are you heading?
Well, I live in Jackson, Michigan, but I'm going My parents abandoned me on Thanksgiving, so I'm going to visit my godparents in Grand Rapids. And so it's an hour and a half drive, and I've got, like, ice packs around.
Where's the pie?
The pie is in my back seat, wrapped in every available cold. I mean, I got a bag of fresh peas in there, or frozen peas, rather, trying to keep it cool. So it's going to be an interesting adventure. I do have one really quick question for you, and this is something I was thinking but I haven't been brave enough to try. I was thinking about making a ginger whipped cream to go on top.
That would work really well. You could shave some fresh ginger into it. And I like the idea of the fresh ginger better than the dry ginger. It just tastes better.
Oh, it's got so much more flavor.
Hey.
So just kind of finely shave it in there?
Yeah.
Well, you could do a simple syrup with it, too.
Oh, I love simple syrup ginger.
That could be great, too. Hey, okay. Elizabeth, good luck with the pie and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye now.
We have Rosie calling us from Bath, England. Rosie, happy Thanksgiving.
Hi. Oh, my gosh. Sorry, I don't want to sound really weird, but I listen to you every single night before I go to sleep. But please don't be creeped out by that, because it's just, you have just been really fantastic.
Well,
we all love you here.
Thank you.
We all love you here, and we're doing an American Thanksgiving, and we've got the family here, and we've got turkey, and we've got pumpkin pie. We did this last year, and it was really great. Although we had a hard time finding a turkey, but this year it's great. But I'm doing a very unusual thing, and everybody thinks I'm really weird, but I'm doing butternut squash with the marshmallows on.
Oh, yes, yeah, like sweet potatoes or yams with the marshmallows.
I roasted the squash. And I've put it in this little dish because I'm not making a lot of it because it's not really something everybody's keen on.
Yeah.
I don't really know what I'm doing. Do I just make like spices on it? Or do I just
put
marshmallows?
Chris, you want to take this one?
Well, one way to do it, if sweet potatoes or a squash, is peel it, cut it into 2 pounds, cut it into quarter-inch slices, put it in a big saucepan, and cook it with 4 tablespoons of butter, 2 tablespoons of cream, maybe a little brown sugar, a little salt, and just cook it covered until it's fully cooked. And then you can add some spices, whatever you like, and then just put that in a casserole dish and top it with those little mini marshmallows. But that way, if you boil them, you lose a lot of the flavor. So they really cook in their own juices. It's a good technique.
Oh, okay, great. That's good. I haven't got many marshmallows. I've got big marshmallows. But...
That's still fine, and you can just run that into a hot oven just to melt them a little
bit. Just for 5 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, for a few minutes, and you're there.
Oh, God, this is really weird. It doesn't seem like I'm actually talking to you because you feel really far away, and you're like Minnesota, so... Yeah, it's really strange.
Well, you're in one of my very favorite cities in England, one of the most beautiful cities in England. But tell me something. Why celebrate the American Thanksgiving? Obviously, you're British.
Well, it's actually more to do with, we went to San Francisco. We've been there a few times, really lucky. And my whole family's just really fallen in love with the States, and I've fallen in love with the States, and I'm going to do American literature at university because I love it so much. I just think that we just wanted to have the celebration. We like the fact that you have everybody, and you just do it this really big family thing. And, you know, we have Christmas like you have Thanksgiving.
Yes,
It's just really great because this year we've actually got the pumpkin puree to make the pie as opposed to having... We cooked up a pumpkin last year, and it was really watery, and it was horrible, this year, it's actually fantastic, because we've actually got the real deal. They were having it in the evening, because it's like 4 here, 4 o'clock
right,
in the afternoon.
Right, right. Oh, you poor... It's okay. It's going to all work out wonderfully, and... What I think it's just lovely. Hey, Rosie, thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Oh, no, thank you so much for being you, because it's just my mum's so excited. She's been running up and down the house. Linny's on. And we have you while we're doing cooking. And I've listened to your turkey triage for last year so many times. And it's just fantastic to finally spoken to you. Because you've always said about doing it.
Well,
and it's great that we finally have.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a wonderful one. Okay.
You too.
All right. From all of us here. Take care, Rosie.
You're an international star now.
I'm blushing at this point.
My Lord.
Yeah. Well, Chris, can you stick around? We've got to go to break. Okay, but will you stick around for more calls?
Sure, love to.
Okay. Now, we're going to be back in a minute with more of your calls. You can reach us at 800-537-5252. Jane and Michael Stern of Road Food fame are going to be here as well. I'm Lynn Rossetto-Casper. You're listening to a special Thanksgiving broadcast, Turkey Confidential, from American Public Media.
I'm thankful because you care. I'm thankful for dreams we share. When you came along, I was born anew. That's why I'm thankful to you. Oh, I'm thankful for happy hours. I'm thankful to all the flowers that smiles up at us from underneath the dew. Darling, I'm thankful to you. You seem so far above me. Each time you said you love me, a rainbow shoots across the sky. I've made quite a catch, and though I'm not your match, I'll do my best to satisfy. Oh, thankful baby.
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto-Casper with Turkey Confidential from The Splendid Table and American Public Media. It's Thanksgiving triage for cooks and non-cooks all across the nation today. The lines are open for you. Call us 800-537-5252 or join our live chat at splendidtable.org. Now, we're also posting photos of your own splendid table, so get to that website and show us what's going on in your kitchen. Now, we're getting help for a few more minutes from the mind behind Cook's Illustrated magazine, Chris Kimball. Chris, thanks for sticking around.
A great pleasure.
Well, Chris, we're going to get back to the phones. Remember, guys, call us, 800-537-5252. We've got James from Cincinnati. James, what's happening? What do you want to talk about?
Well, I have a question. I'm calling for a friend of mine to conceal his identity, but he soaked a turkey.
We've heard that before. It's all right, James. It's okay.
I'm wondering how that's going over. he soaked a turkey in a salt brine overnight and then went to cook it and did not rinse it. So we're afraid of that it's going to be too salty when the turkey comes out of the oven. It's been in the oven for about, 2.5 hours now.
Uh-huh. Chris, what are your thoughts?
As they say, the cow's already out of the barn on that one. The only thing you should think about, you can deal with, is that the drippings will be very salty.
Okay.
So if you do make a gravy using some of the drippings, I would use much less of them. If you use 3 or 4 tablespoons, I'd knock that at least in half. And then if you're going to use some chicken stock with it, use an unsalted or a low-salt chicken stock. Because you will find that you end up with a very salty gravy. But as far as the turkey goes, it'll taste great.
It should be okay.
It should be okay.
You know what I'm wondering, Chris? One of the things I do when I make the turkey gravy, I scrape up the brown bits in the pan.
Yeah.
Not so much. The liquid's great, but the brown bits that caramelize in the pan are the things that make a great gravy. And I reduce wine into it, a dry wine, a red or a white. So what I'm wondering is, would that reduction of wine, reducing it down to almost anything, do you think that might diminish the salt a little bit?
Hey, who cares? Nobody's going to notice. It's fine. No, you're right. The problem with the drippings is they're very fatty. And so
Bad?
Well, there you go. Good point. Got me again. A small amount. It's Thanksgiving. Who cares?
Yeah, right.
But that probably will help a little. But it's going to be salty. So whatever you put into it, make sure there's no salt in the stock or anything else.
Yeah. Hey, you should be just fine. And James, just tell your friend it's just fine.
All right. Well, thank you for your.
It's probably Carl. He's calling for Carl Castle or something, right? We're going to recognize the voice.
Well, thank you for your help.
Pleasure. Oh, you are welcome. Happy Thanksgiving.
All right. Same to you. Bye bye.
So, Chris, what are you doing today?
Oh, this is, here's what's interesting about today. We make, lots of desserts, pumpkin pie, pecan pie. I made a mincemeat pie. I make a trifle, make an apple pie. And I used to do all the desserts for years and years. Well, I have four kids, one of whom is 19, Caroline. She worked as a baker last year.
Right.
So I sort of feel like the 85-year-old whose license is about to be pulled, you know, and you drive with a family. So I say, what? No, you sit in the back seat. You look tired. You know, so, like, she's, like, doing, like, most of the pies. And I keep saying, well, I'd be happy to do it for you. No, Dad, it's all right. You go relax. So it's like, I think my term as in-house baker is near an end.
But yeah, you've been put out to pasture.
I think so, but I'm barding the turkey. We use a wood cook stove. I actually am making an all-day chicken stock as the basis for the gravy.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, I haven't done that in a long time. And we make homemade Parker House rolls, and I also made a trifle for desserts. We have five desserts this year.
Now, trifle's so associated with Christmas. It's the layering. Yes. It's cake and pudding, right?
Yeah,
cake
and a custard. I do a pastry cream, you know, lightened with whipped cream. I make chiffon cake, which we cut up. And then I use cocoa powder. I don't use fruit. I use cocoa powder, which the kids seem to prefer. And it's their now favorite non-Thanksgiving dessert on Thanksgiving. And we have some Brussels sprouts in the garden, and the turkey's actually from our neighbor across the road. She grows three a year. She grows, and they
name cheat.
Them.
You cheat. You're out in the country. For
I know. This
sakes.
Is so Alice Waters of me, isn't it? I feel so noble.
You really should. I mean, you're doing the local thing up the kazoo. By the way, did the turkey have a name?
Yes. Oddly enough, it's Thanksgiving. There's Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Easter, but Easter died an early death.
I understand.
There are only two left.
Yeah, so there's a pig waiting in the wings. I don't think we should go any further with this one.
no cobwebs, no.
You can call us at 800-537-5252. And yes, I'm no vegetarians and vegans. You're upset at the moment, and I do apologize. Or go online, splendidtable.org. Chris, we have got an email from Paul in Indianapolis about how to cook rutabaga.
Oh, boy. I did this last year, actually, and they're like big turnips, you know. And they love, by the way, the people in the world who eat more rutabaga than anyone is the Canadians.
That's interesting. I would have thought it was Scandinavians. Interesting.
Americans eat about a tenth of a pound a year or something. The problem with rutabaga, I do them with mashed potatoes. I use two parts mashed potatoes, one part of that. Is sometimes they're really watery and kind of bitter, and sometimes they're not. So I try to get the smallest ones, but I just cut them up and boil them, and then I put them through a ricer because sometimes they're a little woody, you know, the texture.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I simply mix them in with the mashed potatoes when I mash them in, and that's how I do it. I don't like them just on their own. I like them with mashed potatoes.
Okay.
So, how do you do them?
Well, what I do them is, one quick way to do them is I thin slice them and I throw them in boiling water for about 10, 15 minutes to soften them. And then I put them in a pan with butter and brown sugar and allspice and some chili and some vinegar. And essentially, and then I cook them and then I boil that all down to a glaze. So what's left is that earthiness that they've got becomes a complement to the glaze.
That's a great recipe.
Yeah, and you can do that with potatoes or carrots or turnips or whatever. It's called kill it with spices. we've got a caller. We've got Scott calling from Michigan. Scott, what's up?
Hey, Lynn. I am on the way from Ann Arbor to Chicago on the Indiana Toll Road right now. And my sister is about to stuff her turkey that has been brined for, I think, way too long in a soy and maple and bay leaf and garlic kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know where she got that one, but it sounds good. And then she's got the chanterelle, mushroom, chestnut, traditional turkey spices stuffing ready to go inside the bird.
Yeah.
Now, I am all so for stuffing in the bird, even though most of my family fears it because they think they're going to die if it's not cooked enough.
Right.
But my sister wants to know, is that going to contrast with her brine and just be awful?
I don't think so. I don't think that contrast is going to be a problem. But the concern, the stuffing should be entirely cooked when it goes in. And Chris, why don't you talk about this too? About what do you do with this stuffing?
Yeah,
does it work? And how to roast the bird?
Well, if you just take the stuffing and you can tied up in cheesecloth, or if you have a stuffing bag also. But heat it in the microwave to about 140. And then, of course, carefully, because it's going to be hot, then put it inside the bird. And that way, you're not going to have to wait till the stuffing, which should come up to 160 before it's ready, So the breast meat doesn't become overcooked. So just preheat it, and you can just microwave it a few minutes on high and get it up to 140, and then you're all set. The other thing we do sometimes is we like extra stuffing. We take some of it and bake it, essentially, add a little extra liquid to it. Some of it's in the bird, and then at the end we mix them to get nice mix.
That was definitely the general plan. I still have yet to hear of anybody dying from the salmonella, but I will have her be cautious, and we will go forward.
Yeah, and I think the flavors are going to be great. I mean, chanterelle sounds fabulous. I of course, I'm thinking of what that stuffing had to cost, but that's why we eat hot dogs on certain days.
I guess now, so. Look, well, great. You're two of my heroes.
Well, thank you,
thanks
sir.
For calling.
And drive safely and have a great holiday.
Happy Tuesday.
You too. Call us, 800-537-5252. We've got Idell in Grand Rapids. Idell, what do you want to talk about?
Hi. Yeah, I am. We're making a vegan Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
And I have a recipe that I'm trying to convert over. It is for making cranberry pineapple minis, and you use gelatin.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't do, like, Knox gelatin or anything like that. I have to use something else as a thickener, and I'm just wondering, what can I use to make it gel?
Chris, what do you think? Because there's so much natural pectin in the cranberries.
Yeah, and the apple also has a tremendous amount of pectin. We actually use grated apple works, even in blueberry pie we use it. But there's also, of course, now it's a little late, but there is agar-agar. It's a seaweed-based
right,
product.
I had thought about getting that, and my son, who's the vegan, said, oh, Mom, you don't need to do that. You can just use arrowroot. So that's what I was going to try, but I just kind of wondered.
Well, what's the recipe again? Explain very briefly.
The recipe calls for pineapples and cranberries and some walnuts and some apple slices, and then you're supposed to use a raspberry gelatin. But what I've done...
Is this going into a crust of some sort?
No, it isn't. You're putting it into a little mold. It's not a big gel. It's just little mini Jell-O mold.
Right.
So everybody can have their own individual one.
Oh, how sweet. That's darn.
So I'm just trying to figure out. I'm thinking, oh, I hope this works. This is all kind of experiment. We always experiment for vegan for him. So I'm like, okay.
The apple isn't going to help it set up. You need something stronger if it's a mold.
Yeah. You know what I'm thinking? Gee, Chris, what do you think? I think you may want to do a little conversion here and serve it in small cups and not try to unmold it.
Okay.
Because the arrowroot might do it, but I don't think it's going to be stiff enough. Do you?
No.
No.
See, that's what I was wondering.
Okay, so the brain trust between the three of us here has decided you're serving wonderful little compote cups.
Okay.
And you can name them for your son. You know?
Okay.
It's all about naming the food. Right?
Yes, exactly.
You
know, it's Jeff's Fabulous Compote Cups or something on that order, and you'll be home free.
Okay.
I just do have a question. If it's a vegan Thanksgiving, does that necessitate full disclosure? I just wanted to ask, because that's another possibility.
Well, it's probably, I guess you would say it's 90% vegan.
Yeah.
And that is, we are doing Cornish hens. And everything else is vegan.
I just use gelatin.
Chris, not
just go for it.
This is the running debate we have every single year, Idell. Chris and I always run into this because I'm sorry. If you're vegan, you don't eat meat, and that means you don't use gelatin. But we don't need to go there. Family harmony has to remain intact.
Because
he's very polite about it. If we, you know, we tell him, okay, this is what we did, and he goes, oh, I can't do that, he'll just abstain from it. But each year, he's been a vegan now for five years.
Think...
So each year, I've been trying to convert different recipes. And you're absolutely right. The arrowroot did not do, because I was just looking at it, and they're kind of sloshing around. So I probably should have gone with the agar flakes and...
My two oldest kids, they're 21 and 19, all went through a vegetarian phase.
Mm-hmm.
And I just cook bacon every Saturday morning for months. And that, you know, it just did it.
Well, he's 25
maybe
now.
Maybe I'm cruel and unusual punishment. Bacon
well,
always
my brother
works.
Likes the teasing, you know. This is really good beef, you know.
You guys are terrible.
I know.
Idel, you have a fabulous Thanksgiving with the compote cup.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Chris, thanks so much for being with us.
Great pleasure. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
And you too, sir.
All right, take care.
You too.
Bye.
Chris Kimball is creator of Cook's Illustrated magazine, and he's host of PBS's American's Test Kitchen. But, of course, most importantly, he's the Splendid Table's honorary stump master. Now, call us, 800-537-5252. Anything goes. Great stories. White knuckles. Anything. Or go online, splendidtable.org. We've got Vera calling from Baltimore. Vera, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Well, I bought a turkey about a free-range turkey about 3 days ago.
Yeah.
Put it in the oven. Not in the oven, in the refrigerator.
I'm glad, because the oven would have been troublesome.
Yeah. it's still frozen inside.
Is the outside defrosted at all?
Sort of. There's icicles in the legs and things.
Uh-huh. Okay. Is it still wrapped?
I've just unwrapped it.
How many pounds is it?
9 pounds.
Is this is going to be okay? When do you want to eat?
Whenever it's ready.
This is a very wise decision.
I've never cooked a turkey in my life. I'm going to follow the directions on the packet.
You're in very, very good company, so don't worry. But this is what you're going to do. You're going to fill a sink with cold water. And with the turkey in the package, you did say it was in the package, right?
No, I've taken it out.
All right. You're just going to put it in a garbage bag into anything that can seal it and not have it have the water get into it.
Okay.
And sometimes the best thing you've got is a plastic garbage bag. Put it into that sink, okay? And for a turkey that's that size in about 2 or 3 hours, it is going to be ready to roast.
Okay.
And now, once you've got it out of that, you have a choice. You can roast it one of two ways, and these are one of two extremes, okay? You can do it in a slow roast, which usually ends up with it being quite juicy, all right?
That's what I like.
Okay, 325 for about 13 to 15 minutes to the pound. And if you're going to stuff it, add 3 to 4 minutes per pound.
Okay.
And have the stuffing hot when it goes in.
Okay.
And preheat your oven a half hour before you put the turkey in.
Okay. At 350.
At 325. 325. Okay. And just remember, 13 to 15 minutes to the pound.
Okay.
Now, if you really want to speed it up, you can go in another direction. Have the oven at 450 degrees.
Yeah.
And roast it for 10 minutes to the pound, but do not stuff it.
Okay.
And that's going to give you also a juicy turkey and a very crisp skin, obviously.
Oh, good.
Okay? And yeah. You can slather it with butter. You can put herbs on it. You can even put things under the skin, you know, which we've been talking about. But the reality is it comes down to as simple a choice as slow roast or fast roast.
Okay.
No, another that's question? Good.
Yeah, but I forgot it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Call us back. Call us back. But seriously, it's going to be fine. It's
okay.
Happens to everybody. And you've got a small turkey, so it's going to defrost fairly quickly. Just keep that water really cool.
Okay. Thank you.
And have a very good one.
And you too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. 800-537-5252. Or head to the website. Send us photos. What's happening in your kitchen right now? All right? Or on the back seat of the car with the pie, perhaps. We have got Kieran calling from Great Falls, Virginia. Kieran, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Hello. I'm only 10 years old, Mrs. Casper, but I have a question. And my question is, are there any drinks other than eggnog that are traditionally enjoyed around Thanksgiving?
Ah, you know, there's a lot of drinks. There's old-fashioned drinks. And, of course, the names of them have immediately dropped out of my head. But they're drinks. Are you talking non-alcoholic or drinks with alcohol? Because there are wonderful fruit punches that are done.
I mean, I'm only 10, so, you know.
Now, these are for you, right? You're 10, so you don't want alcohol.
Yeah.
Okay. This is what you want to do. You want to take cranberry juice, all right? And you want to take some grapefruit juice. You mix this together, okay? And then you shave into that lots of fresh ginger, and you pour in some ginger ale, and you put that over ice cubes, and it's fabulous. It tastes gingery, and it has that nice tartness of the cranberry, and it's just wonderful. And it comes out of a very old drink that used to be done in New England in the 1800s. Yeah. And it, you know what's nice about it? That instead of eggnog, you know how rich eggnog is? This is very light, and it's really fresh. So you can kind of sip on it all day.
I gotcha.
Okay. Does that sound like something you'd like to do?
Yeah. Oh, and I just have one more thing. Does it have a name?
No, but I'm going to make it up right now. It's Kieran's Cranberry Cup.
Okay.
How's that?
That's great.
We're in our cup phase right now on the show. Hey, thank you, sir, and have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Oh, thank you. Call us, guys, 800-537-5252. We've got Ardith calling from Kensington, Maryland. Ardith, what's up?
Hi, I love your show.
Well, thank you.
I am calling because every year I make two kinds of sweet potatoes, one with the marshmallows on top, which my husband and several people at our table really like, and then I try to do another more elegant kind. And I've got a recipe with apricots that I really like.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I tried one that had cumin and stuff like that in it, and it was okay, but nobody really particularly said, bring this back next year. And so I'm looking for some alternative. I mean, Thanksgiving's all about sugar and fat.
Right. Yes.
But
and
is
salt.
There some alternative for sweet potatoes? Given I'm doing one sweet, is there another way to do them that isn't all sugar and fat? And by the way, I have to add, I've already parboiled. I parboiled the sweet potatoes yesterday.
You did. Are they sliceable?
Yes.
Okay.
They're still in their skins.
Okay. Because this, I'll tell you, one of my favorite things to do. And it's not traditional holiday, you know, Thanksgiving food, but you can serve it at room temperature, which means you don't have to fuss, you know, with stove space.
I like that.
Slice the slices a quarter to a half inch thick. And then in a skillet, all right, film it with some oil and cut up about 1.5 inches of ginger into very, very, very thin sticks. Do you have any fresh chili in the house?
No.
All right. Do you have any hot chili at all, like powdered chili, that kind of thing?
I do. Oh, yeah. Tons of that.
All right. Okay. We're in business. How about garlic?
Yeah, of course.
All right. You're going to need 6 big fat cloves. This would be for about 4 potatoes. Okay. So multiply kind of accordingly. So you want to thin slice, paper thin slice that garlic. All right. Take a little onion, like a half to a whole of a medium onion. Slice that really thin. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have any fresh basil around the house, would you?
No, but my neighbor probably does.
Well, if she or he does, that's great. But also fresh coriander or even a little parsley would do.
Okay.
Okay? And the idea is that you're going to sauté the ginger and the garlic together, all right? You're going to, until it's just beginning to soften, and you can really get this great aroma, you're going to give it salt, you're going to give it pepper, you're going to stir in that chili and get the aroma of the chili, and then you wilt in a handful of that fresh basil, and you pour that over the top of the thin sliced yams or sweet potatoes.
Okay.
And give them a little bit of extra salt, and then you squeeze lime over them.
Okay.
And they are fabulous. They are spicy and delicious and tasty, and you can serve them at room temperature, and they can sit and wait, so there's no big deal.
Wow, that sounds great.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, the other thing, if you really want to heat them up, is in that same skillet, you can heat up some olive oil, some garlic, some fresh herbs, pour it over the sweet potatoes that you've spread out in a shallow pan, and stick them in a 450-degree oven until everything's bubbling.
Okay.
And then you're there.
That's terrific.
Yeah. So
I'll add one thing that 2 years ago, the Washington Post ran an article about spatchcocking a turkey, taking the back.
You know
out.
What? I'm so sorry. We have to go.
Okay. Well,
I'm sorry.
You. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, you are welcome. Happy Thanksgiving. Right now, it's time for us to check in with Jane and Michael Stern, our road food duo. Hey, you two, happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. And this is now home food because we're not on the road. We're home.
Gobble, gobble.
Hey, all right. You know, I realize normally we talk about where you are and all that. Forget all that. What are you eating?
Well, turkey and all the fixings. What are you eating?
No, but specifically, I mean, what is it going to be about this Thanksgiving right now?
Okay, well, before I tell you our menu, let me just say that, let me see if you agree with this. Let me start this way, that you could pretty much divide the world who celebrates Thanksgiving into two camps. There are people who obsess about the perfect turkey, how it's brined, how it's roasted. And then there are people who have no interest in the turkey, wish the turkey would just fly out the window so they could eat the stuffing, the cranberries, the yams, and all the side dishes.
Yeah, I think you're right. I do. And quite frankly, I think the turkey, with all the obsessing over it, gets completely lost.
Well,
with all
as
the
well
side
it should
stuff.
Be.
As well it should. This is something Jane and I have
but
had many. Are we going to get into a bat?
I'm pro-turkey.
Well, I'm not anti-turkey, but for you can have a plastic turkey there, as far as I'm concerned, as long as the stuffing, the potatoes, and everything else was in its proper order.
My perfect Thanksgiving would be turkey with gravy, and if without the turkey, you couldn't have the gravy, and I don't need anything else. I love turkey.
Well, I'm so glad you two are together because finally you're going to get a balanced meal.
I know it's like Jack Sprat. It is.
I'm not anti-turkey. And in fact, I think the aroma of Thanksgiving very much depends on the turkey. So if you could get a turkey-smelling candle, I would be happy just making the stuffing in a pan because that way it gets nice and crusty. I don't like putting it inside the bird anyway.
But let me say one thing, Lynn, and this is like so against the modern, you know, way of making turkey. I hate brined turkey.
Really?
Yeah. To me, it tastes like a big hunk of pastrami. I mean, I just like the plainest, simplest turkey. As long as it's juicy and just slathered with gravy, that's all I want.
You know, you've got a very good point there. Overdone, it can taste like a pickle.
I'm kind of nostalgic for turkey before it became fetishistic.
If I'm nostalgic for any kind of turkey, it's for that kind of turkey that's like totally dried out, that needs the gravy in order to come back to life. Like our friend always, we have a good friend who used to make Thanksgiving dinner for us all the time, and the turkey would be maybe 2 hours too long in the oven, and he would pull it out, slice it, and as those dried pieces of white meat fell onto the platter, he would look at it and go, ah, done to a turn.
I can't believe you are nostalgic for that, Michael. That was the most excruciating meal I ever had.
I couldn't resist thinking, you ate at my aunt's table.
Right.
Hey, guys, thanks for talking with us, and have a great holiday.
You too, Lynn. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Goodbye. I don't know how those two have survived this long. Jane and Michael Stern are the creators of roadfood.com. Now, you can hear them every week on The Splendid Table, and you can find their restaurant picks on the website splendidtable.org, which, by the way, is there for you 24 hours a day. And in case you're looking for inspiration right now, there's our new Americana vegan menu along with the recipes. Also at splendidtable.org is the Splendid Table store, where you can find products related to cooking and baking. You're listening to the Splendid Table's annual culinary call-in program, Turkey Confidential, from American Public Media. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
American Public Media.